185miles south.com.
Smash that Patreon button.
Miles South, a hardcore punk rock podcast. What's up, everyone? This week on the pod, we are talking hardcore. Helping out, you know him, you love him. It is the best dressed man on the pod. He killed all the birds. It's Daniel Sant. What's up, Dan?
Clock strikes upon the hour and the sun begins to fade.
Beautiful words from a beautiful man. Also helping out, 6'2", what you gonna do? It is the mighty, mighty Posse Chris. What's up, Chris?
Wait a minute. Dan pulled a Randy Johnson. Is that what I'm hearing?
Dude, yeah, all the birds from episode 185, he actually methodically went through and rang all their necks.
Oh, the Costa Rican birds?
That's right. Yeah, he said that since he hasn't eaten an animal in 30-plus years, it was okay. Also helping out, the nicest man in hardcore, it is Andy Diehard. What's up, Andy?
Yo, thanks for having me.
Good evening. Yeah, dude. Hell yeah. Okay, wanted to jump into a couple things. For the people that were confused why we weren't on last week, we are going to every other week now. So last week we didn't have anything. This week we do have something. Next week we won't, and on and on. But we moved the patrons from every other Friday to every other Monday. So if you're a patron, you get a podcast a week. So check that out. Handle business. $1 gets behind the paywall. And more than that, helps keep this podcast alive. The patrons are the true heroes of this podcast. And if we ever drop below a certain level, we gone. We're not every other week. We're never any week. So what's up? That's true. Okay. I just wanted to touch on one other thing from episode 185. The people in the artwork for the episode on Instagram, because no one knew, dude. I thought someone would come through because we got some diehards. But going from left to right top, we got Pops, Anthony Papalardo. We got Stu. Old school Stew from the pod. We got Clevo. We got 6'2", what you gonna do, Posy Chris. We got the mighty Ben Edge. You got your boy right there on the tank top. Then you got Daniel Sant, the slightly less good looking version of myself. We got the tall boy, episode one, the legend, Joe Rivas. We got the god, Noodles. We got the other god, in case this is a Krishna shit where there's many, many gods, you know, it's smelly. Then to Smelly's left, or to your right, it is Roger, low-key MVP of the pod, always helps out with lots of stuff. Then we got old school Johnny Condom. Then we got Darren Pesci, or Pesky, or Darren Pesh, whatever, the first drummer of Youth of Today, shout out. And then we got the mighty Squirrel up top from the band Billingsgate. What's up? And that's what's up. So, but yeah. I wanted to have Andy and Chris on because they had recent pretty neat hardcore experiences. Andy went to Sound of Fury, and not only did he go to Sound of Fury, but he brought his kids. So like that's two perspectives to talk about. And then also Chris, you just got back from touring Europe with Change. Let's go to you first. Any highlights from the tour, and what's like the state of the union of European hardcore right now?
It's all goodness, man. Like it was an incredible time. Shows were all great. You know, lots of old friends and new, good food, cool sights. You know, you get all the history in Europe that you get to see, the, you know, different architecture, the different landscape, which is always cool. Weather was on the hot side, but I'm down with that. So it was just all fantastic, you know, just wore less clothes around town. We did 10 shows. We hit Barcelona, France, Germany, Netherlands, Poland, and Czech Republic. I think that's it. Shows were all sick. Played with some cool bands, a couple of standouts. There's a band called Remain from Dresden, I think, Germany. Pretty dope youth crew style band, which, you know, everyone who's listened to Pod knows that we got a soft spot in our hearts for that youth crew vibe, especially the European youth crew. Bloodsucker was a really cool band. I think Zach would not dig the vocals just because it's more on kind of the Only Living Witness worship tip, which is the marshmallows falling off the stick a little bit, but I think it's sick, and it's got like total like Best Wishes riffs. The singer like belts out the, like he sings most of the time, you know, like Only Witness, Only Living
Chris,
Witness.
Chris, you're style. Trying to say it's super metal, but you like it.
It's great, man. I'm down. I support it. And the really impressive thing is if you listen to this band, Bloodsucker, they're on Spotify, like the singer belts it out, like Eddie Leeway style belts it out. And, you know, a lot of times people pull that off in the booth, but when they get, you know, up on the stage and do it, like they can't pull it off. And I was pretty surprised, like how sick he sounded. D's Nuts, a band that the name certainly like sets an expectation. But they were super cool live and actually really awesome dudes and really hit it off with them. Jesse from No Warning was playing drums with them. So it's really sick to see him. Played with Youth of Today a couple times, with the We're Not in This Alone lineup. It was actually my first time ever seeing Youth of Today, like in my life. So that's kind of crazy. And, you know, it was a good lineup to see it, I think. So I had a lot of fun, did a lot of stage dives, the second night in Berlin. Some good ones and some disastrous ones because it's a pretty tall stage, but it was fun. You know, as far as highlights,
I think today, real quick, Chris.
Yeah, for sure.
Dan, have you seen them?
Yeah.
What was your take?
I mean, I go in a very negative mindset, like, oh, fucking washed up, sellouts, whatever. But those songs, they'll get you hardcore Holy Ghost in, you know?
Dude, I dare ye to not catch the hardcore Holy Ghost when they play Stabbed in the Back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And yeah, I saw him at Shea. It was wild. Yeah, I feel you, dude. Like when it starts and, you know, Ray is very animated and it's like, it makes it almost a little sillier. But then, dude, if you close your eyes a little bit, good God, man. You know,
hey, I can't close my eyes.
That's right.
But, yeah, the way I always like to look at it is like, all right, I'm seeing Youth today in the year 2022. There's no way it's even going to be a fraction of what it was seeing them in 1988. You go in with that mindset and just, I don't know, I kind of view it like, you know, with hardcore, I always feel like time and place is such an important part of things, which is why I'm never like super hyped for reunions, just because when you take it out of that time and place, it's not the same. But you know, like Dan said, like you said, like when they play those songs, like, you know, they're the best Youth Today cover band you'll ever see, you know. So it was cool.
Yeah, and it's pretty wild because like poor Sal must have gotten worse at guitar, you know. I was like, god, this guy's barely hanging on. Like, you've been playing these songs for how long, dude? Like, keep up.
You know who's sick though? Sammy, man. He was on point. So
yeah, I saw a couple of videos. You got a good drummer. Like, damn, he's good. I mean, that lineup, like, if they do a handful of shows, they got to be insane because of who's playing, right? But of course San Diego is always the first show of the tour, and bands come through and they're all sloppo, you know. But if we're the sloppo show, just charge $20, not 40. Come on, you know, it's like a warm-up that you get paid for, but treat it like that, you know. Andy, also, you ever gonna see Youth of Today?
Yeah, so one of those reunion things they did, maybe the first one, somewhere in L.A. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
They did like the Pomona stuff, right? I saw them there,
and then I saw Glass House or something like that.
Right. Yeah,
that's yeah. Right. I saw one of them. I mean, yeah, I was the same way. I was very skeptical, but yeah, Ray goes off, dude, and he still jumps around and does some poses and whatnot. And I mean, it sounds awesome. And yeah, but once they start playing, I get psyched, dude. I mean, they're playing that. Yeah, they play those songs, and I think if someone does a cover of those songs, I'm gonna be psyched. So when they're doing them, it's even better. So
yeah, and I remember when you know, the Rev tour came through when Better Than a Thousand played. Like, I think they played both times, or maybe they played that big ass Tenure Fight Battery show at the Showcase, and then they played one of those Rev tours, because I seen Better Than a Thousand there and the Whiskey, and I remember. They played the Whiskey, and it wasn't super packed, but there was a fair amount of people. But when they covered Take a Stand, like I stage dove, and that was terrifying. That stage is high.
They played that Rev 20 is where Andy probably saw him.
Right. Yeah, it's like I was so hyped on seeing Better Than a Thousand Do the Day song. So it's like I got to try to not be washed up, you know, 20 years later, you know?
Well, the thing about this lineup is just seeing Walter like busting Richie Underdog fist pumps and stuff is just so sick to see. Like, he's so fired up, you know?
It's pretty sick, dude. Okay, Chris, sorry to sidetrack you there.
Nah, good combo. I think as far as like the hardcore, because, you know, you go to Europe, you play all kinds of shows. You play like VFWs, you play, you know, squats, you play big, huge fests. But as far as like the hardcore shows that we played, you know, like the hardcore non-fest level, I think for me, Berlin and Paris were really the two like highlights. Like both of the shows were popping. And then, you know, all three of the fests we played Fluff Fest, Extreme Fest, and Free and Easy Fest. And they were all super sick. It was kind of a funny aside. So Extreme Fest, I guess this is kind of a normal thing in European fests, but like the headliners, I guess, don't like to play last. So they'll have like the headliner and then some scrub band play like as the outro, you know, like the grab your last drink and leave band. And we had the distinct honor of being that at Extreme Fest. So, you know, we played after it was like Flogging Molly, was the headliner and Circle Jerks played before them. So like, you know, Circle Jerks played and then Flogging Molly played. And then we were the band playing like the side stage after them. Right. And so we kind of went into it expecting like, well, you know, if like 50 kids kind of stick around and watch us, like that'll be sick. But it was pretty awesome. Like, I don't know how many people left, but it couldn't have been more than like 10% of the crowd, because it was still pretty packed when we played, and kids still wanted to, you know, party and like circle pit, and it was a really fun set.
One of the things, all the people that sat through a full Flogging Molly set, huh?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, this is in the south of France, so, you know, alcohol is definitely a big thing. So, like, respect all the people that have been there drinking for 3 days and still wanted to hang out at – we played at 12:30. So, you know, between 12:30 and 1:30 in the morning.
Wow.
After the tour, I took a couple days solo in the south of France just to make sure that I didn't bring COVID home to my wife. It was a rough sacrifice, but you know, you do what you got to do for your family, you know? So I just went and hung out on some beaches in the south of France for a few days and, you know, had a little wind down time, which is pretty cool. But to your first question, one of your first questions about like the state of the, you know, the European Hardcore Union. European hardcore is so sick. Like, there's such a high percentage of lifers there. You know, you see so many faces that you've been seeing there for, you know, 20 years or more. And like, people still love fast hardcore, which is really cool. Still kind of ride for the more youth crew stuff. And then it seems like there's a really high percentage of like those historical venues that have been around for years and years and years and years. The first show of the tour, we actually played in a venue in Hengelo, Netherlands, which was actually the first venue, like the same venue that I ever played my very first show in Europe. So first time champion went to Europe. We played there with The Promise, a local band called, I'm drawing a blank on their name right now. And then Justice. And it was a banging show, and that venue is still around, and we got to play it this time around. And so it was a really kind of like a special time, like going back to this venue that has such a special place to my heart. And it's pretty fairly common for like a lot of those venues to still be around for a while. And I'm not sure if it's that more kids just respect the venues and take care of them and don't like mess things up, or if it's that, you know, that the local governments like care more about like the arts and trying to preserve some of these art spaces, or maybe, you know, maybe it's a combination of the two, but it's really sick.
That rules. Yeah. Like looking at some of the crowds of the fests and then looking at Sound and Fury, I was thinking, like, is Sound and Fury an example of like America just catching up? Because, like, you know, Europe, totally. Hardcore bands play the big fest. You see like a shit ton of people there. And then, you know, there's lots of fests here that are drawing a shit ton of people. If this is hardcore, and then Sound of Fury just being wild, like 5,000 people outside there. You know, it looks so awesome. What's your take on that, Chris?
Totally. I think so. I mean, I've thought about that too. You know, like obviously we were in Europe during Sound of Fury, so I didn't get to see it, but you know, I was certainly looking through Instagram and getting some major FOMO, even though, you know, I was obviously having a great time and being in a great place, but it looked like a really sick time.
Yeah. Andy, you went, and then, so Andy, you're what? 43?
46.
46. And your kids are how old?
I took my oldest son and his friend. They're both 17. And then I took another, Danny and Donnie Phillips from the Warriors fan, the twins, their younger brother, but he's like, I want to say he's like 23 or 24. So he went with us too. But
that's cool. That's a sick spread. So what was your take, your overall take? And then what was the kids' takes? That's what I'm really interested in.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually dreading it. I just thought 2 days out in the sun was going to be too much, but, it was pretty awesome, man. It got me pretty, you know, there's a lot of bands on there I wanted to see and hadn't seen. So, and my kid actually saw it online and was like, hey, can we go to this? So, said, yeah, find a friend to go with you. We'll get some tickets and we'll roll out. So that's what we did. Pretty much the first day we missed a couple bands just cause we had trouble parking, but, every band was good, man. I mean, like, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into, but like every band, I mean, from, and probably from the time we got in around, like, I think we missed the first three bands the first day. And, but by then there was hundreds of kids in there, if not thousands. And, I mean, every kid, every person there was paying attention to the bands. There was nowhere really to, I guess, hide out, you know, outside and go in the back and ditch the bands. But, and there was a good variety of bands that Riley and Martin, who planned it, did a good job on, like, the way they set it up, where it kind of the show would ebb and flow with, like, heavy bands or fast bands. There'd be a melodic band or something different to change it up. So you weren't just barraged with the same, you know, there wasn't 10 youth crew bands in a row and then a couple, you know, more tough bands or, you know, seven melodic bands. So they did a great job with that. Yeah, I said the whole thing ended up being a great time. Saw a lot of people there that I hadn't seen in a while and a lot of good bands. Yeah, I said, do you want me to go into some of the bands or what do you want to hear?
Yeah, I just think that like the sequencing was really good. I'm glad that you called that out. Didn't stack like all the tough guy bands together or the hard sounding bands and then all like the hardcore adjacents together. You know, it was like kind of a little bit of a rotation that, you know, if you're a long day of live music, it's nice to change it up, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they did a great job. Like, so we came in when Soulblind was playing. They're kind of like a heavier, like, almost like alternative style. And that was after the first three bands we missed, like Ingrown, I think it's pretty heavy. But they played right before that. So that kind of, like, changed the vibe. And then it went to a couple of, like, melodic bands. Praise played, which was awesome. Got to see the Andy and that band, which seen them a long time ago, but that was I haven't seen them in years. So that was a great, like their vibe was super cool. Like fun loving, you know, like emotional kind of like vibe that Praise has. I mean, we've all heard the records, but, and I think right after that, like it kind of went into, like Koyo and some other like more melodic-y stuff. Maybe that band, No Pressure. They're kind of like a pop punk band played. So it kind of like went, kind of the first four bands were heavy, then it got lightened up a little bit. And then I think the afternoon it went to like, maybe after Koyo was like Pillars of Ivory, which was, they're awesome, man. I think you guys would all love to see them live. Like they pulled off the records perfectly. Those guys had awesome stage presence. The singer Mind Force was super funny. And just, I mean, they're throwing out weed pins to everybody. And, Aaron Knuckles sang in all five of his different voices, you know, like they just really, they were really impressive. They pulled it off live.
Yeah. Dan cannot stage potato though for Pillars of Ivory. He would be kicked out of the triple X scene.
They will tell me to get the fuck away from them.
Yeah.
If you don't smoke weed.
Probably the first day, one of the best bands, this was Speed, which you guys did the record a while back. And I liked it, but I hadn't really given it too many listens. But their live set was crazy, like killer good sound. And then the singer guy, they were just so psyched to be there from Australia. And just like his whole like little speeches between songs really was like kind of got a lot of people pumped up, dude. And like their set went off. Trying to think who else played that first day. I think like Drug Church had a good set. I like that band. I don't know if you guys do, but I like them. And that's one of my kid's favorite bands. That's one of the reasons he wanted to go. So and they were filming a video. So they had a live video. So they just had like every song had hundreds of stage dives, people going crazy, singing along. Tsunami was cool. I never seen them before. Just heavy, just what I expected, to be honest. Pretty wild. Fiddlehead was great. I like their records, but their live set was this almost like a hardcore set. Like the singer guy from Have Heart, I mean, like it took it to another level. He was all over the place. And then Drain set was cool. They had boogie boards flying around. The sound kind of got messed up. I think too many people were stepping on mics and stuff, but their set was kind of bonkers and just fun. Trying to think who else was on that day. Hard to remember, but
it's all good, dude. Second Let's talk about Tsunami real quick. Tsunami works so well, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like when I seen them, I was just like, good God, man. Like Mike Durst's guitar just sounds savage.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Like, it works. It's like there's so many bands that have like, you know, a lot of beatdown bands these days, right? And you listen to it and it's like, you know, it'll probably be the same live or whatever. But like, yes, Tsunami just brings the heat, dude. They're like, they're doing it for a reason. They're on top, you know. Daniel, your take?
I mean, you love to see it. You love to see a band that's made up of nice people that play hard, engaging music get over. Like, the good guys win, you know. And, yeah, it's just – it's like – okay, here's what it's like. It's like MOP coming out and playing oh my God, my mind just went blank. Robin Hood's Theory.
Anti-Up.
Jesus Christ. I'm like...
Smash that fool.
I'm getting... Yeah, exactly. Take rings off. Take chains off. It's like that. It's just like hype music for destruction. And when it's done with a smile on the face, everyone can have a great time, right? And if it's done with ill intent, then maybe 10% of the crowd has a good time trying to kill 90%. But when that hard music comes and it's everyone's in on it, in on the, I won't say the joke, but in on the good time, then it's just the perfect thing to explode at a place like that.
And so sick to see Drain headline. Like, you know, I'm sure that everyone listening to this has seen them, but if you haven't, you got to go either way. The singer is just infectious. Like his personality on stage is so infectious. You can't help yourself but love it. You know what I mean? And I think they're going out with Municipal Waste right now, which should be great. And they're the band I want to see go with Turnstile. You know, I think they're the band that could like actually latch on to some of that popularity just because there's so much of a vibe coming, you know, from the stage. They don't sound anything like Turnstile, but like, if we think about a lot of Turnstile's appeal as being a vibe and what they put out there and the energy they put out there, I think Drain is a band that could like tour with them and match that and come away like winning over a ton of people. What's your take on that, Chris?
I agree. Like, I always say, like, there's no one that has more fun at a Drain show than the singer Drain. Like, you could just tell he's having a blast. And yeah, it's so infectious. It kind of reminds me of Ephraim's stage presence a little bit from Death by Stereo. Like you can tell he's having fun. And he's loving what he's doing and he's psyched on what's going on in the crowd. And it's just kind of like a cyclical thing where you feed off his energy. He feeds off that energy coming back. And that's like what hardcore is. And it's just encapsulated so well with that band.
Yeah, and they pay their dues. So, like, you can just tell it's a dude, like, not taking anything for granted. So it's rad that they're on top. All right, Andy, day two, what were a couple of the bands you liked the most?
Real quick, though, the singer, Drain, is he Ryan Fredette's cousin? Because they definitely look alike, and they have a lot of the same
smiling
stage presence as they're going insane. But second day, we were there the whole day. It was good, man. First couple bands were good. The first band that stuck out to me was Big Laugh. They're like, I guess they're a new rev band from like Wisconsin. Just like
really good.
Yeah, like mid-80s hardcore. Like they ruled, man. I was really psyched on them. And I'd heard their stuff before the 7-inch, but they played a bunch of new songs and stuff. And they were rad. Cola Boy was awesome. He kind of played in the middle. I don't know if everyone knows who Cola Boy is out of Oxnard. Kind of, how would you describe his music, Zach? Like, he said he was disco, but I don't know if that makes sense. But
disco has such a negative connotation to like punk people, you know? But I don't know. He's just like doing good R&B. It's like a lot of electronic music on the record with him singing. He has like a cool voice. But yeah, I don't know how to describe it. Dan, you might be better to describe it.
I mean, I think that's like straight up by him like saying disco. It doesn't mean like it is exactly like every disco hit you've ever heard, but it's got like some Giorgio Moroder type music to it. It's got some, I would say lowrider oldies to an extent, like in there, but done through a funky, like Prince output. I don't know. It's super cool. And it is, it's not just one thing too. So to try and just, sum it up in one go, he like runs a gamut with his music. I really do think just everyone should check it out.
Yeah, he put out LP this year or last year, late last year, maybe early this year. So everyone check that out. But yeah, his stuff is awesome. And he's playing with a band now, right, Andy?
Yeah, he had a full band. I want to say it was some of the guys from Torino out of Oxnard, but I'm not 100% sure. But they're definitely familiar dudes from Oxnard. They were playing in the band, and it sounded great, man. I mean, I thought another props to the dudes that set it up, because that was a total like mood changer, like a little bit of like take a breath, hang out, watch this, have fun. You know, everyone's bobbing their head, just smiling, dude. You couldn't help but smile and have a good time. He was rad. Yeah. So,
yeah, I got to see him with a band. Like, that's so ill, because I seen him in San Diego. It was just him and a DJ, but it was still sick, you know, but like nothing matches like that live drum and bass, you know? Anyway, yeah, go ahead, Andy.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to think after that. I know, what was that band? There's a band, they got like I'd never seen him before, but I know a lot of people like him. Show Me the Body. They had like a dude on an electric banjo and a bass player. It was pretty crazy, dude. Not my thing, but like they had a bunch of people there that were like just there to see them, I think. Like, so that was kind of cool. Exposed to something different, you know, like just the diversity of the show. I went from Cola Boy to someone else to the Show Me the Body band, which is, I don't know, I'll have to look them up. Never actually heard them on record, but live, they're pretty cool, and people were into them, stage diving and singing along. So I thought that was cool, just something different.
It's such a funny name, like, especially with us always talking about stripper metal, like, what it's like the guy in the front row of the strip club, right when they come out, show me the body, show me the body.
Yeah, they're definitely strange and kind of caught me off guard, but I was intrigued, dude. It sucked me in to the set. Never Ending Game was dope. They probably had like the best middle set. Like, they were just rad, man. I mean, I know you guys like them, or at least you do, Zach.
Hell yeah,
they really pulled it off live. Like, kind of how Speed did the first day. They were that band in the middle that just like kind of blew everyone's socks off. Maybe people thought like, oh, this is gonna be, I don't know. I've never seen them before, but they were rad. Gridiron was awesome. They sound just like the record. They got a cool flow. The guy, like, I want to see a Retaliate Gridiron show. I think you and that singer would could have a flow off whatever with your lyrics, man, or your style.
Lakers versus 76ers.
Yeah, I guess we could do a tour, make some shirts.
I saw one of the speed dudes was wearing a Laker jersey, so respect.
Yeah, Mindforce had a cool, like a Lakers ripoff shirt, something about the Kings or the whatever, the champs or something. But anyways, yeah, Mindforce played that day. Actually, God's Hate, I think, played before Mindforce, and that was pretty gnarly. Not my favorite band. I mean, like, they're cool, but just not something I listen to all the time. But when I hear it, it's like, oh, that's pretty gnarly. But they're like shooting off fireworks and trash cans were just flying through the air. It was the most chaotic, probably violent set. But kind of like Dan was saying with the tsunami didn't act hard at all. I don't know if that's the right word, but like, kids were still going crazy where I do think that with God's Hate, people were trying to kill each other. it was insane, man. There were some huge ass dudes moshing and throwing things in people, but everyone seemed to be into it. So that was pretty awesome. The Ultraviolence was awesome. Mindforce had the best set to me. That was my favorite set of the whole thing. I never seen them before and I was like them a lot. And they just came out and freaking killed it. I didn't even know they were a four piece, and they sounded so good as a four piece. Played all the hits. They played the big stage, and I mean, people went off. I think after them was maybe Terror. Terror was pretty close to them, and Terror's set as always was awesome in LA. I think at one time, like, Scott had them in like six different mosh pits. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw pictures of the Drain set, but when Terror played, the whole entire crowd was a mosh pit. Just a different vibe, but like also awesome. It was pretty crazy. It reminded me of like something of Woodstock, just like a dust tornado in the middle of the whole thing flying around.
Yeah.
It was pretty rad. Good for Terror. And then Gulch finished it out, and I'd never seen them before. And they're cool. I mean, I like to listen to their record as a record, and kind of like, I don't want to listen to one song. So if I listen to their records, I'm going to listen to the whole thing straight through. So it was kind of interesting to me how they did their set, and they did a great job. I think their last song, they got shut down, but like everyone kind of kept singing along and moshing till like the song was done. So it was pretty cool. It would have been nice if the mics would have been on at the very end to give them a little send off. But I mean, I was kind of shocked at how many people were there to see them. I think everyone that went to the fest stayed and watched him. I don't think any one person left before Gulch played, which is pretty rad. I was definitely blown away by that band, and kind of bummed the only time I got to see him was their last show. So, but overall, the whole fest was dope. My kid and his friend like really liked it, man. I was talking to Dave, you know, they liked Cola Boy. They liked my kids. It was, I think, he liked Mindforce and POI and some of these other bands. And his buddy was the same way. They bought some merch. So overall, the fest was rad. Just a bunch of different, so many different kinds of hardcore kids these days. I'm sure Chris has seen, if he's been in Europe, just, I mean, there were so many kids there for that band Spy at San Francisco that, I mean, their merch line was like 200 people long the whole day. Like which was shocking, dude. I'm like, what? And that's how Drains and Gulches was too, and maybe like Zulu. Who's that?
Apparently, I heard the Zulu merch line was insane.
Zulu play. They're cool. I'd never seen them play before. They had some technical difficulties, but not their fault. But they jammed. But their merch line, yeah, they had, I think, some shirts with Brandy on it. The singer. They had some, but their merch line was super long too, but Spy was crazy long, dude. And then when they played, it definitely went off. And all these kids that like Spy are like it's kind of like the new breed of the 625, like kind of, is that what it was? The thrash kids?
Yeah. Like the fast core.
Yeah. What Happens Next? Kind of like they got a certain style of clothes they wear, but dude, all those kids were like, they were up front for Cola Boy. They were in the freaking mosh pit for, God's Hate getting crushed, dude, because they're crushed by these big jock guys, you know, like, but that's what I thought was so rad. It's like, and even my kids, like, kind of, my kid and his buddy went up front for Drug Church, and they got close for One Step Closer, which had a great set. And for Mind Force, they like went all the way up to the front, you know, getting stage dive on. So like, and that's the first time they've been like brave enough to do any of that. So they were super psyched on the whole thing. Yeah, overall, like I said, I kind of had a bad taste in my mouth at first, just thinking it was going to be a long waste of a days, just kind of hanging out. But it ended up being super rad. State of Hardcore is awesome in LA and California, and I'm sure there's people there from all over the world. But yeah, overall the festival was great. I mean, I don't know if you have any other bands you want to hear about or whatever, but it was a great fest. Those guys that set it up and everyone that took part did a great job. Every band that played had a cool set. Like there was no band that I was like, I'm going to go over here and like try to take a nap under a tree or something like that. Like every band like kept everyone's attention. And so to me, the best thing too was still like every kid there, not every kid, but almost every kid there was down for every band. It wasn't like back in the day where, you know, oh, the Throwdown's playing, I'm going to go outside. Because I used to do stuff like that. Oh, I'm not going to watch Adamantium play. I'm going to wait until, you know, whoever, Carry On goes on or whoever. When there's a mixed bill, I might have went outside because that wasn't my thing. I think all these kids these days are psyched on everything and they're getting into everything. So it was pretty rad.
Yeah, you know, like looking at the photos and stuff, like you got to wonder, is hardcore bigger than it's ever been? And then I think about like, you know, shows in the 80s when they were doing them at like the Olympic Auditorium and shit. Like, oh my God, there's always been times when it's been raging. I just wonder what the mix was, Andy, and if you could even tell, like what was the age mix? And then like, was everyone like into hardcore? Or is there like some people that are kind of, they discovered hardcore by watching videos like during COVID and like they're coming out to like maybe one or two shows a year? Could you get any sort of sense of that?
I would definitely say the demographic was more, I'm going to say 20, it could be, I'm saying, yeah, 20 to 30 year olds. I'm pretty bad. I mean, I just look at people's shirts, you know, oh, there's a guy in a Striking Distance shirt. That guy's probably the same age as me or old, you know,
take that bird.
And this is how crazy it is. Cause I was thinking about this the whole time we're there, it's like, man, how did these kids get into this? And I mean, there's legitimately kids there with like death metal face paint on, you know, like from, you know, or black metal face paint on, hanging out with a dude wearing a skirt and a football jersey, like, and combat boots, like just such vast, diverse groups of people, but like together. It wasn't like, oh, over here's all the goth dudes and over here's all the emo dudes or, you know, straight edge kids. Like there's just every kid's different. So I really don't have any clue of how they get into it. I know certain bands probably there, like Gate Creeper had a huge bunch of people that were there. And so like maybe a bunch of people like, oh, I like Gate Creeper, but they went to that show and then now they like Gulch, or they saw, I think these mixed tours are probably exposing people. I don't know Power Trips, how they went about it before they kind of stopped being a band, but maybe Power Trip was playing with other like hardcore bands and taking them on tour and just getting kids kind of like Turnstile is doing now, or I really don't have any clue. I talked to my kid about it, but him and his friends get into it because they were hanging out here with me and I'm showing them music and we're hanging out, and then they kind of took that and ran with it in their own little thing. You know, they got on Spotify and started doing it that way. But
yeah, Dan, what's your take
in regard to the mix of people at the show?
Yeah, and is hardcore bigger than it's ever been?
I think there's always cycles. There's always like, you know, the tide comes in or the tide goes out. Is a way to think about it. Right now, the tide's right up to the boardwalk wall, you know?
But is it big enough? It's flooding. It's like the one in 20 year flood is like that big.
I mean,
it's bigger than any time that we've been in hardcore or that I have. It's the biggest it's been since 96 for sure.
I think so. Yeah. What's impressive and what I think is making it work so well is the feeling of understanding and belonging instead of segmenting off and, you know, I mean, yeah, there's going to be a few dickheads around here, but for the most part, like when I go to shows, I just see like so much inclusion for everyone now. And that's what's allowing it to blossom, as well as the way we consume music now. Everything goes up the day it's released and you can listen to it in your car that minute. So you can get psyched on it, and then you're going to, there's a almost an inbuilt, beautiful notion of, yeah, maybe I'm listening to their music for free, but when this band comes through, I'm going to see them and I'm going to buy something, and you know, I'm going to support them some other way, if I, or I'm just going to buy the vinyl when that's available. There's just, I don't know, such an amazing zeitgeist moment of both the largeness of hardcore and how bands are getting over, but also there's just an amazing communal aspect that I think has surpassed anything in the past.
I wonder how big the parachute is. So like, let's say that you get into hardcore in the last couple of years, like what is your interest in getting to know like all the bands, you know what I mean? Or is hardcore music starting to be consumed just like a lot of other artists, right? Like if you look at giant music festivals, like outside of hardcore, like the mix is pretty wild, right? And a lot of it is just popular bands, period. You know, it's like, oh, here's a few pop people, here's a few whatever metal people or dance people or hip hop people or whatever the fuck, right? And that's how a lot of people consume music now, is like they're not taking in full albums and definitely not taking in bands' full catalogs. They're taking, you know, the most popular songs from a handful of bands of this genre, and that's all they got to fuck with. And there's like nothing wrong with that. It's just so different than like the way that, like, you know, we came up consuming music. Is kind of fascinating to me. What do you think about that, Dan?
Yeah, I think that's a really valid and crucial point. Also, lots of bands that are playing now are doing sets of 15 to 17 minutes. Shout out I See in Jerry's Pizza. But they're playing smaller sets because the social evolution of the attention span in regards to this in a cell phone culture, Spotify world, and skipping around songs and stuff like that, is that's the best way to have an impact, is to hit people with like 8 great songs at a set. No one's doing covers anymore, like at all. So that might be a clue or a nod to, I'm not saying no one completely, but the majority of the younger bands are not doing covers of classic hardcore the way that when we were growing up, that was almost an essential point on a set list, you know?
Dan, let's put a pin in that because that's a great segue to the next thing I want to talk about. But Chris, let's get your overall thoughts on just all this in general, if you want to hone in on anything.
Yeah, I had some stuff that I jotted down, but actually I want to put that on the back burner for a second, because I like something that Dan just said when he touched on inclusion. I think that's a really interesting idea. You know, particularly when you think about something like hardcore, that's always been about, you know, seeing someone on stage in a band or someone booking a show or taking pictures or whatever they're doing to be involved in this scene, and seeing those people and thinking, I can do that shit, you know? And that's like, that's what hardcore is all about. Like seeing people do things and saying, I can do that. You know, I can be involved in that way. And that just has to be so much easier to relate to, you know, the people that you see doing things when that person, you know, maybe looks a little bit more like you or, you know, identifies the same way that you do. And, you know, people talk about diversity and inclusion all the time from many different perspectives. And, you know, sometimes it's a checkbox that, you know, corporations like to get so that they don't get in trouble or, you know, So I don't get people popping off about them on social media or whatever. But like, that's what real inclusion is about, is like, is people seeing other people that they can identify with and saying like, you know, particularly in hardcore, wow, that person's just like me. I can do that. You know, I can play in a band. I can book a show. I can, you know, do a stage dive. So I think that's a really interesting point.
Yeah, there's no barrier to entry, or the lowest barrier to entry in hardcore, right? Like anyone can start a band and play a show, right? And you can probably play with your favorite band. If you like dedicate yourself to like making the best at your band, you can probably play with your favorite band within a couple years if they don't break up.
No doubt. You could even put the show together.
Right.
You could book the show and be like, yo, I'm going to have my band open.
That's exactly right. That's the move, you know, and that's why, because there's such like a low barrier of entry, it's like, that's why you got to keep your eyes peeled for the sus bands that are just trying to get famous, right? Because hardcore is not a stepping stone. Get the fuck out. This is not your home. What's up? Andy, you got to take on this?
It is the best.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I'm not as a, don't speak as well as you guys, but kind of what I was trying to say, like I said, that vibe with Chris and Dan are both saying about the inclusion was very heavy, very strong at that fest, dude. And I was just thinking about it right now, like those last couple of shows I've been in, Oxnard, we played a show, and then Terror played, and that other Retaliate show that was there with Dead Heat a couple months back. Like, and I'm like looking at all these Oxnard kids, and even there, I mean, it's just, that was a, what you want to call it, just a small snippet of what I thought was just Oxnard. But that might just be the whole California hardcore scene now. I'm not sure it has back east, but like I said, so many kids, they're just doing their thing. And I still think like, why did 5,000 people want to see Gulch play? Like how did they get that many kids? I mean, it just blows me away how rad it is that like 5,000 people went to that fest. And I think every single one of them, and even some of the people like the security guards were like watching this band play. Like it was awesome. And like, it was just such a cool thing that all those guys, whoever set the fest up. And I think part of it too is like you guys are saying, it's just part of the scene right now. And everyone feels like they can be part of it even more so than back when we all got involved in it. I always thought like, yes, this is a cool spot for the skater nerds to come and listen to punk rock and do stuff. But now I said, it's just, I'm not sure where these kids are getting it, if it's all from playlists or whatever, but the inclusion factor that you guys brought up is huge, and it's definitely alive and well, and like that's making a huge difference of like I said with the Gulch being as big as they are, that band Spy just being a crazy amount of kids, just like so psyched to see him. Gate Creeper was like, I know they're a bigger band, but like all their fans were psyched on other bands too. So like, yeah, that inclusion is key, I think.
What's awesome about that is the three bands you just mentioned are extremely abrasive sounding, and right, yet thousands of people are checking them out at once, you know?
Yeah, and I just don't know where they get it. Like, are they listening to, and there's not like CD samplers anymore. I mean, is there satellite radio? I mean, unless they're just
following the algorithm, right?
It's like, yeah, you listen to something and it goes through. Yeah, yeah. Which if they're paying that much attention is awesome. That the song pops up on their Spotify or whatever, and or Bandcamp, whatever, and they get that into it. It rules.
It's the exact same way we all did it. We got turned on to bands by friends, or saw them at a show, or like Zach said, instead of the liner notes of an LP that we would comb over, now the algorithm like turns you onto something that is a bit similar, and then you go down that wormhole, and then you follow like, you've got six new bands on your radar by the time you finished listening to the Gulch LP, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty rad.
Chris, I'm curious on your notes that you didn't get into on this, so hit them.
I mean, there's nothing like super profound or anything. I think, you know, one of the things that I wrote down is like, you know, if you look at it from the perspective of floors and ceilings, I think the floor is still there. Like, you know, you could still go to a show in the year 2022 and be one of five kids there, you know? But the ceiling is getting pretty crazy high. You know, when you have fest like this with 5,000 people, you have, you know, Have Heart playing to 8,000 people. You have, you know, Turnstile playing on basically every late night show, you know, and Dan playing in I forget which show, the band. You have, you know, bands like Scowl and Military Gun going on tour with Limp Bizkit, or, you know, Sonny from Hate 5-6 being on tour with Rage Against the Machine, and just, you know, the exposure that, like, his work, you know, I guess contributes to hardcore. And to that point, I think, you know, you guys kind of touched on entry points from algorithm perspective, but I think there's just a lot of different entry points now. Whereas, you know, in the pre-internet days, it was, you know, the entry point was largely accidental, you know, either you had a friend that knew about it and could hip you to it, or you would just randomly end up somewhere at a show and see it and witness it and be like, whoa. And I think, you know, hardcore has always had that ability, that power to like show people like, yo, this is different, you know, like this, what's happening here is a little bit different, and it's unique and it's special. And I think there's a lot more, I guess, avenues for people to witness that specialness, whether they, you know, whether it be seeing a band like Scowl open for, you know, Destroy Boys, or seeing, you know, seeing one of Sonny's Rage Against the Machine videos and then going down a rabbit hole on his other videos. Like there's so many entry points for people to see like how special this is. And it's self-evident. And I think that contributes a lot to it.
I think that's a super interesting point to an extent. Like, let's think about this. Let's focus on something that happened at Sound and Fury, right? That this could be a total entry point thing. A video of dude from God's Hate doing the craziest, like, kill the crowd stage dive, right? That probably on Instagram Reels plus TikTok has gone like viral, of just to people who've never been exposed to hardcore at all. That video itself could be this entry point to a wormhole, to finding a band you like, to then tagging into a few other things. And I mean, who would have thought that would have been a thing, like, you know, many years ago, that like a viral vid can be something that gets someone to like the best music in the world, you know?
Yeah, first off, we should acknowledge that with Dan saying a kill people stage dive, that stage dive was 100% respectable. Anytime you do a Superman with full commitment, it's a 10 out of 10 every time. Respect. That was a perfect stage dive.
Oh, I know you love it.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, he's a giant man, so yeah, it's going to kill some people, but whatever. He did it the most respectful way he could, so respect.
I just laugh at that poor one kid where his hand like kind of grabs his head to like be the first like point of like thing, but it almost looks like his hand moves across his head and like rips his scalp off.
Well, you took a bump from Brody King, so hey.
Yeah.
Talk on the internet about it. Yeah. You know, we've seen bands catch fire from short viral stuff, right? Like
Tsunami. It
aided Dead Heat in getting popular. They had like a crazy parking lot video initially. You know, Tsunami, that show, like, is perfect, yeah, right? Sure. They put three songs on the internet, this full goon, and then that's the video you see, like full goon. You know, it helps. My concern, and I appreciate Chris bringing up the ceilings and floors stuff. I love that the ceilings like getting raised higher and higher, right? Turnstile, these shows like Sound of Fury, it's awesome. My concern is, does the floor get kind of low, or we don't worry about the flow or the floor in a way, because people are drawn to a lot of the spectacle, right? So if you get into hardcore recently and you just go to bigger fests or bigger shows, is it a letdown when you go and you see a band play to 200 people in a room? You know what I mean? Like, or is the spectacle like a big part of the draw, like as much as like the music and the community and so forth? What do you think, Dan?
Well, when I heard Chris's ceilings and floors thing, I think the floor is like the backbone, the base, the stuff that will always be there and always regarded as the classics, you know, And then the ceiling is where can hardcore go across the world, maybe. That's kind of the way I thought
his... But in terms of popularity.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So, I mean, to me, the real are going to be real, right? So the same passion that can be generated with 26 people singing along right up front at the Che and no one else being there can easily just be as special as the spectacle of Gulch at Sound and Fury. In fact, it can actually mean a lot more when it comes to what the real absolute DNA of hardcore is. To me, it's about that expression, like powerful expression, regardless of it's not. Putting on a show is a great thing, but it's not what the base DNA of hardcore is to me. But I mean, yeah, there are going to be some people who are drawn in by the spectacle and the almost the viral sense of things, and also the just sheer like wacky ignorance of some of these things. And yeah, maybe that 15, 20 people show at the Che wouldn't, it would be a letdown to them, but it doesn't mean that they're not like welcome or they're not properly hardcore, but I like to think that the real synthesis of what is hardcore is in those moments even more.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that I like about current hardcore more than ever. Like, I like kind of the, it doesn't matter if you know your history, you know, I think that's actually kind of positive. Like, that gatekeeping is not necessary. Although I do think that, like, it's a beautiful thing when people want to know, because the history of hardcore is all building blocks. It's building off one thing to another, to another, to another. Right. And that's why hardcore is so great right now, is because you can cherry pick all these different little things and like create a sound around it or create your songs around it. Right. And the whole like evolution of hardcore is just such a fascinating process. And also, you know, I always say since about 86, like hardcore has not been about the music. It's been about like this intangible thing that's like very hard to explain. You know, we talk about the secret handshake. You know, I mean, we talk about catching the hardcore Holy Ghost, and like, that's what it is, right? Like, no one's going to accuse Agnostic Front of not being hardcore. Cause for Alarm is a crossover record. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a straight hardcore record, you know? And so there's that. Hardcore becomes like a thing and not necessarily a sound, you know? And I don't know, then it gets like harder and harder to define, you know, 30, 40 years later, like what is hardcore? Chris, you got a take on any of that?
No, I mean, yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that the thing I was going to jump in on is a little bit different, but I think, you know, when we talk about like the floors and, you know, are people coming in attracted to the wrong thing? Like that's always been a problem for as long as this, you know, scene has been around, is people see certain things and they get impressions of, you know, whether it be, oh, there's a bunch of people clobbering each other in this room, I'm going to come in and just be violent for violence sake, you know, like, or, you know, like Zach kind of was getting at, hey, there's not going to be 500 people at that show. I'm not going to bother to go because I'm not going to have as much fun, you know, with 10 people in the room. And I think, you know, regardless of how big that entry point is, like there's always going to be a, you know, probably a small percentage that grasps on to like the real important things and become true, like longtime contributors. But I don't know, but I think this has just kind of always been a thing.
Dan, you had talked about no bands doing covers now. I mean, obviously that's an exaggeration, but yeah, it's not like a canon thing anymore. Before, like, I remember Posse Numbers 2002 when In Control played, like someone did a tally, like in the merch room, like how many covers. And it was like, I think we played on day two. I can't remember if there was 2 or 3 days, but like they were at like over 40, you know, halfway through day two. You know what I mean? Like, covers used to be a thing, and it's not a thing so much anymore. And that leads into this question. I wanted to shout it out to Andy and Chris, because they weren't on episode 185. We actually talked about this on the Patreon of episode 185. So it's 185.5. Smash that Patreon button. Listen to the episode. But I wanted to toss it to Andy because he's got kids that are in hardcore, and then also Chris. But here's the question. I'm turning 40 next month, and when I was getting into hardcore in the mid-90s, I was introduced to the foundational bands / records to get me started. Youth of the Day, Minor Threat, Cro-Mags, Warzone, etc. I'm beyond curious what a teenager these days gets into as foundational material when they start their journey into hardcore. Does some 16-year-old now think American Nightmare and Have Heart are the old-school foundational bands, or even some newer stuff like Title Fight? Are any teens even going back to listen to the 80s stuff to build their knowledge from the ground up? Is all that stuff lost on the youth? And yeah, we talked about this a little bit on the Patreon, but then when I listened to it, when it came out, like, we got sidetracked pretty quick and didn't super, super dive into this. I wanted to.
Yeah, I don't even remember answering this.
Yeah, I think we just got sidetracked by the birds and started talking about barbecuing. But yeah, Andy, that's a question for you, although I don't know if we can look at your kids an example, because they have you to show them what, like, the classic stuff is, right? But, like, is there any interest in going back to, like, bands from, like, the 82 to 86 era just to know the history?
Yeah, so I talked to my kid about this today a little bit, just him and his couple of buddies. They're trying to start bands and do stuff. And just from talking to those kids over the past, whatever, couple of years and then being around, I think a lot of kids they get into hardcore through, we already kind of mentioned, like, playlists are the algorithm. But with my kid, I was always listening to it, and he kind of heard some stuff, and then he got Spotify and did his own thing. I think his first bands he got into were like Bane and TUI and like the Movie Life, like just a kind of a, I think kids nowadays are more apt to listen to a bigger variety of music. I know when I first got into hardcore, I was like, okay, I like these youth crew kind of bands, and like, that's it. I don't want to hear this heavy bands or this band that's kind of metal. And it took me a while to branch out. But, so I asked him today, you know, like what is him and his friends think? And I think after they kind of get hooked on hardcore, they'll listen to this aggressive music, whether it's Gojira or, you know, Deftones or whatever, or actual hardcore bands. If these kids like this aggressive music, they eventually, if they get into hardcore, like my son now, he is more into like we went to Salzer's just the other day, you know, and he's buying a Warzone and a Beyond record. And I'm like, all right, dude, cool, man. Like, which I'm super psyched on, you know, but I don't want to push him in any direction. But I think at first when I'm telling them, like, hey, dude, you got to listen to these bands, like all the old ones, buying it for Christmas, I'd buy them, you know, a Judge record or a Chain of Strength record. And they kind of sat on the shelf for a long time because they didn't really care about going back and listening. They're more concerned about what's going on now and the band they might be able to go see. So maybe if a band did a reunion, they might be psyched. But I think at first these kids are way more interested in what's actually happening around them, and they can listen to on Spotify that just came out. You know, this is a new record. I don't think the desire that we had all had to, like, oh shoot, I'm into this thing, like I got to go listen to this Minor Threat discography or whatever and absorb all this stuff, the Bad Brains and take it all in. I don't think that's as big of a priority, but I think after a while when they, well, just speaking from my kid and his kind of buddies, that after they kind of get into it and they're like, oh, where did these guys, and it's the same thing we always see, you know, they look in the records and they see someone wearing a band shirt in the photo or the liner notes. But so I do think it's still there, but I definitely don't think it's as prevalent. And I think if kids today, just my kids, if I tell them to do something, hey, you need to go listen to the Bad Brains or the Cro-Mags, they're probably going to say no, just because they're high school kids and they don't want to do what their dad tells them to do. So I can't really speak on other kids, but I do think that kids today are just as apt to tell you to, you know, to take a hike if you try to tell them to go, hey, you got to know your roots. they don't care about that. I mean, a lot of kids don't care about that. So I'm not sure that answers your question, but I think that there is a group still that is going back and listening, but I'm not sure it's quite as an important part of hardcore that it was when we were getting into this, and like a necessity to like, no, you got to know that cover. You got to know that, you know, you got to have these, you got to know your roots. So.
Right. It seems like a lot of it is like it's a wider net, but not as deep. Right. So it's like, yeah. You're getting into a wider array of bands and music, maybe not even strictly in the hardcore lane, but even in the hardcore and hardcore adjacent stuff, like your likes can be, it's like a wide array of stuff, but maybe you're not going all the way deep, right? Like all of us at one time, like loved Youth Crew stuff, and we all bought third, fourth rate Youth Crew 7-inches. Wow. I don't even think that like that stuff exists anymore, right? Like, you can't get away with like being a fourth rate Youth Crew band and like getting a 7-inch out, you know, like your band's not going to last that year that you wait for your vinyl to come out. Yeah. And like, I'm not trying to listen to like some, just like demo of some shit band.
Well, you know when I mean? Tell my kid to go back and look at stuff, like, you know, he'll make a playlist and we'll be listening to in his car. And it's like, it's got Earth Crisis and, you know, maybe a Gorilla Biscuit song. It's like, there's so much stuff that's super old to them that to him, like Earth Crisis, like that's not the OG, you know, but like to him it is, you know? So it's like kind of a weird thing that I think about, like, that's pretty cool, man, that you like, you found some of these things on your own that I think are cool, but I never really played for him. So they're not just going back to the Rev catalog, you know, there's a huge thing to pick from.
He obviously got into Earth Crisis from listening to the fantastic 185 deep dive on the Firestorm 7-inch.
That was his favorite, or is his favorite.
Here's the thing,
like, though. The thing is, like, the older hardcore gets, like, the years get crunched in, right? So, yeah. Like, there's a giant difference between 81 and 89. Like, that gap of hardcore is insane, you know? But then, like, when you look at it now in, you know, 2022, and you look back, it's like, really, what's the difference between 91 and 86? Like, well, if you're following the history of hardcore, like those 5 years, it's like insane, like the way things changed, right? But if you're like a 16-year-old kid today, looking back, it's like 91 and 86 is all boomer shit, you know? Well,
my point was going to be that when we're getting into it in like 92, looking back at 88, it seems like it's years ago, but it's 4 years ago. Do you know what I mean? But it is, so much has changed in those 4 years in hardcore, like you just said. But yeah, someone who's getting into stuff in 2020, they may look back. But here's the thing. I'll look back at 1963 versus 1967 in like classic rock. There's obviously a different time. So I think the way that people, we can't just boil this down to this is the way the youth are getting into things, because there's always going to be like demo core David going deep, deep, deep into that one thing, like going and just researching and going down and going down and finding the most obscure thing that he wants to build a sound around. And then there's going to be the person who's just living on the surface and just loving what's being served up today, you know,
Wide Net Willie,
you know.
He's a deep dive demo core David and Wide Net Willie.
Yeah, Wide Net Willie is just at a turnstile pit, just vibing.
Yeah, I think that, like, you know, even if you go back and you build some of the history, like again, it just doesn't need to be as wide, right? Like, you're learning any sort of history is daunting. You know, you have to like kind of choose a lane. But anyway, Chris, you got any final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I got a few thoughts. First, I think that last point is a good one. You know, there's certainly a lot of people that don't care about the old stuff. And then there are a lot of people that do care a lot about the old stuff, and not just, you know, classic hardcore, but I see like kids who are, you know, real big into like Dinosaur Jr. or, you know, Weezer or like Seaweed and like these, you know, kind of hard post-hardcore or like hardcore adjacent things. So I don't know. Everyone's kind of different. I do want to bring up you know, one point that I hope doesn't come off disrespectful to the listener, because I certainly don't mean it that way, but I think it's worth like putting in perspective when we're looking at, you know, specifically a few things that this person mentioned. Disclaimer, I'm a liberal arts major, so I reserve the right to some bad math here. But you look at Title Fight, which was a band that they mentioned. Title Fight's last show was in 2016, I believe. So that was 6 years ago. Let's say for the sake of argument that the prime was, you know, the year that before they broke up, that's 7 years ago. So when we look at a band like Youth of Today in comparison, their prime, I think we can all agree that 1988 is probably a safe, you know, Youth of Today prime. So if you got into hardcore in 95, like that's 7 years from Youth of Today's prime. So if you look at it through that lens, like Title Fight is as much a legacy act now as Youth of Today was for a kid that was getting into hardcore in 95, which is kind of crazy. You know, especially through the lens of, I think it was Dan that mentioned a few minutes ago that, like, you know, back then when we were much younger, it seemed like that 7 years or even that 4 years, it was like an eternity. But now, I mean, feels like I, you know, was seeing Title Fight a year or two ago.
That's a great point, because it's like we all kind of know that. But I think when you attach the band names to that and like that 7 year span, like that's pretty insane. And you're totally right.
And I'm sure there were like, yo, I'm sure in 1995, there were like crotchety old like 80s hardcore kids hanging around saying, psh, Youth of Today, that's just wannabe like SSD New Jack shit, right?
Of course.
Yeah. So. But the thing is that the kid who's going back and listening to Title Fight right now is also, a lot of the time, the same kid who's going back and listening to We're Not In This Alone and enjoying both, you know?
For sure. In some cases, I'm sure.
Yeah, Dan.
Sure, because the mentality of looking back is the same, right? It just depends on where you want to look. Okay. Andy, did you have something to close out on before we jump to new music?
Yeah, what Dan just said, I just wanted to say, like, with my kid, I've noticed with his playlist, he makes it, it's almost like it doesn't matter what year it is, dude, whether it's, you know, Chain of Strength, the Title Fight, or TUI. If the song's good, the kids are gonna like it, you know. I don't know if the year matters, but I think that's what Dan was kind of alluding to, but or talking about, but
tracks.
But a nice bright recording matters. Like, I'm not trying to like be listening to a playlist and it's like loud and then it's all soft and then it's like loud. I try to group like that, you know? That's why I use Warzone as like the kind of the gatekeepy record. Like, if you don't like that, you don't like hardcore. Cause like it sounds good and bright and there's like so much shit on it that it's like, you're going to find a piece of this that you love if you like hardcore. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to like have people get into like, I don't know, the Abused demo, right? Cause like it has an old sound. I love it, but we talk a lot about like the old school bands, like the recording being like the fifth member in the band, right? The same way that works for us, it could work against it. If you're like listening with like 2022 ears. Okay, let's go on here and talk about some new music, because that's what it's all about. Dan, straight out of the UK, The Flex, they got a new record, Chewing Gum 4. I got to open it. Do you have it in front of you?
Chewing Gum for the Ears.
There you go. This thing will put some hair on your ass, that's for sure.
What a review. I hope that that is a sticker on the LP when it for the second press.
Dude, like this thing is burly. Like I was listening to it. I was walking around Best Buy getting my steps in and I was just like, good God, like I might knock over an aisle right now. Like it just sounds so gnarly and they know what's up. When you're a band that like is playing this fast, gnarly, no hint of melody style, you got to come with some mid-tempo bangers. They do. This LP is really easy to listen to, and it is gnarly. What's your take on it, Dan?
This and the Syndrome 81 are competing for record of the year for me for right now. Now, it's funny that you say, like, there's not a hint of melody on this. This is probably the easiest to listen to Flex LP or Flex musical output so far, and it is still the most aggressive, mind-chewing, brutal, punch-in-the-face hardcore that you're going to listen to. And yeah, you're right. Those, like, I won't even say mid-tempo bangers. The ability to change from the fast, aggressive, punchy parts and go into just classic, like, I would say almost like, I'm not even going to say breakdown because it's gnarlier than that. It's so aggressive. Like, it's like SSD and breakdown crossed on the musical side of when some of the breaks come in. But the vocals are delivered with almost like a early NYHC phased through a doom and discharge like filter. Like, the vocals are so UK post doom, but they're still so NYHC at the same time, early NYHC, you know? It is just so aggressive. It's so hard. Like, Beechwood Terrace, Jesus Christ, that song is so fucking hard. Soma Holiday, that part where it breaks and it's like, shout out Soma side stage, Chris doing mega, mega high jumps. It goes, Soma! And then the breakdown kicks in and then, Holiday! It's so sick. The Flex 4 song is that mid-tempo banger that Zach's talking about. So good. I expected to like this a lot, and I like it so much more than I expected to. And I expected it to be really high up on my list for the year so far. And I've listened to this a lot this year, since it came out like three months ago. I got the LP from Lock It Out. I played the LP a lot, but I've also just listened to it while stuck in traffic on the Bay Bridge, just wishing I could Gravedigger monster truck over everyone and just while blasting the Flex.
Oh, yeah. Andy, did anything on this grab you?
Yeah, super aggro. I don't know how Dan listens to in traffic. I'd want to drive through people. It's definitely a record that when I listened to this week on my jogs just to stay pumped up. I was kind of running and working around the house when I had it on, so I don't know all the track names, but yeah, like, every song was awesome. Every song was super pissed. I definitely ordered the LP already to get it. I want to read the lyrics and stuff just to see how gnarly it is, but the recording was cool, kind of like raw and totally fit the band. I haven't listened to the other stuff, but I have to go and check. But yeah, this record rules. The art was cool. Trying to think if I had anything else. Just, I think this would be a rad band to see live. Just back at the Ohio Women's Club, just circle pitting the whole time to the floor stomping mosh would be insane. So yeah, super aggro, and I'm definitely going to give it some more listens.
Hell yeah. Chris, what's your take on this?
I'm sensing a trend. We got super aggro. We got puts hair on your ass, road rage. I put this pulverizing. For 17 and a half minutes, it doesn't really let go. It just beats your ass for 17 and a half minutes straight. Sounds sick. It's really, really well done. I think some of my favorite parts where I think this band is at their best is when they, you know, when they kick into kind of that mid-tempo street punky, but not really. It's still hardcore breakdown. It's just like a real boot style breakdown, I guess, would be the best way I would put it. But yeah, this is a cool record. Really good. Sounds awesome. Songs are raging. Dan touched on this a little bit, but there is some hidden melody, but it's not done, you know, to Zach's point, it's not done in a way that, I guess backs off at all from just the pulverizing nature of it. It maybe just adds a little bit of depth to it. I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah, this is sick. Great record.
I love it. I love it. Okay, let's go on and talk about Raw Brigade, the LP Aggressive City. Good God, man. This thing is so awesome. The first song kind of seems like a mission statement, and it is a well-written song, but it might be the best on paper hardcore song, but I think that the album really gets going with track two and then Never Lets Up. This thing is just like, good God, like they mashed up like fast hardcore, and then sometimes they go into like a little bit of street punk, but like, and that seems like a dirty word sometimes, like, you know, they're not putting on scally caps and they're not like celebrating, you know, St. Patrick's Day all year round and shit. Like, this is just, I don't know. It's like they're tastefully dancing on like putting a little bit of that style in their music, and it just works so well. There's so much YOLO in this. It's like the YOLO record of the year, right? Like, I think that we can say like the Flex LP is more punishing, and this is like, again, it's not too far off. It's fast, it's raw, it's hardcore. But this one is like the little touches of melody and a little more YOLO they touch in here really makes it stand out in like that lane. I absolutely love this LP. I think it's one of the greatest things that's come out this year. And yeah, Dan, what's your take on it?
It is very, very, very good. Remember the day it went up on Spotify? I think I texted the group chat just like, holy fuck, listen to this. Much like on Beyonce's Renaissance, where it goes from energy into Break My Soul, this seamless, beautiful thing, the second half of the track Aggressive City going into the track Burning is just so perfect. It's like the second half of that song, Aggressive City, is like that. Like Zach says, they're channeling. I mean, it is straight up like a blitz part, but with a hardcore underbeat. And then it goes into Burning, which is another mid-tempo banger. And it's just, it's the pinnacle of the LP for me. But every song is awesome. Just saw him recently with Field of Flames, and they were rad. It's cool because they're from, I believe,
Colombia. Bogota.
Yeah, Bogota, right? Yeah. So it's super cool because they've got like the big dude on guitar who's doing Richie Underdog fist punches the whole time. They've got the singer who has the stage presence of like General Patton, like the George C. Scott version in the film. Like, he's marching all over the place and saluting and stuff, and it's so rad. And then they've got the bass player who, like, it's just such a great group of people that have found themselves to play this mixture of hardcore that works so well. Each person's brought like a, you know, to make the best curry ever, you bring all these different spices together, right? Keep it mild for me, please. But you bring all these different spices together. You got your turmeric, you got your curry powder, you've got your ghee, whatever. That's what's being brought together by all these different people with possibly slightly different influences to make this just amalgam of really fucking ripping hardcore punk.
Hell yeah. And you know, for the best yellow curry in San Diego, you got to go to Mekong on a Convoy. Andy, what's your take on this record?
Yeah, I really like this one. Heard it for a little bit, I think, when after Dan sent that group chat. Yeah, it's angry, fast. I like the way the dude sings. His kind of accent kind of shines through. These guys played first at Sound and Fury that first day, and we missed them, so I was super bummed on that. Yeah, I like when he gets kind of singy. It's not like he can sing good, but it's awesome. That's a YOLO part, I guess. My favorite song is that Aggressive City. It has that cool kind of drum break in it and then to the breakdown. Yeah, just a super rad record. Art's cool. Yeah, not much more to say. You guys kind of nailed it. I like that. Yeah, it kind of hits that what I call oil or street punk, but I like that mix and just, yeah, the record just rips. I really, really, this is my favorite one out of the group.
Oh yeah, the recording on this is so good. The Flex recording is really good too. Like for fast LPs, like these modern recordings are just bringing the heat. Like they're so big, but they're not losing any like that aggression. It's so ill. Chris, what's your take on this Robert Gibb?
Before I get on the record, I just want to double down on Dan's comment about how sick they are live. Like just so much energy, and they're the coolest, like sickest kids too. I met a couple of these dudes at This Is Hardcore. They were standing in front of me in line to get in the first day. And I just kind of, you know, talked to them, where are you guys from? You know, and, you know, just we chatted about how much we all loved Brotherhood. And that was kind of like the foundation of our friendship. And then, you know, I went into the show, the first band played, and both the dudes from this band that were there were just moshing like crazy when the first band played. And like after the band was done, I was like, yo, so you guys like that band, huh? Or like, you know, you must really like that band because you guys were going crazy. And they're like, it's not really like my favorite style, but I just wanted to support them. And, you know, they're not as many kids mosh for the early bands, like that kind of vibe, you know, just kind of like showing up for hardcore and it's super sick. As far as the record, like this is one of my favorite records of 2022 as well. Probably top five, I would say. You know, a band that started a bit more kind of Brotherhood worship, if you listen to their early stuff, and they've really kind of developed their own sound by pulling from some different places over the years, including, I'm sure, like plenty of Latin American, you know, punk and hardcore stuff that I am not as familiar with, but I certainly hear a lot of Blitz on this too. There's a lead in the track Aggressive City that's like total like Blitz vibe. And then, you know, there's some chorus parts like where the phrasing has a super Blitz vibe. But not as much like, I don't know, the more sing song, even more like Never Surrender, you know, like just super aggressive punk rock that is not super tuneful, but still is super catchy. You know, like on that song Death, there's a part where it's like, I don't know exactly what he's saying, but it's like, wait for, you might be already dead. And it's just like so catchy. And it really, I thought about this too, what Zach was saying about how similar this was to the Flex in style, but how different it is. Because, you know, the Flex, you have this just like bulldozer that just like runs you over, and it's incredible, but it's not super, I didn't find it to be super catchy. You know, like there's not too many like Flex songs that I'm singing in my head after I turn it off. But like it's a Raw Brigade record. There's tons of parts where there's just like really catchy sing-alongs, and it's done in more of a, I don't know, more of a boot vibe than like a youth crew sing along vibe. And I think it's really well done.
It's a cross section of high top Nikes and boots, right? Talked about that before. Okay. Yeah, it rips. Everyone check it out. Raw Brigade, Aggressive City, Handle Business, order that record, go see them live. Special band. Okay, I wanted to talk a demo next. The band is First Day Out. I believe the demo is called Don't Be Surprised. They're out of Florida. I came across this. I think it was probably on the No Echo 2022 list. And I go through all that stuff because I'm a glutton for punishment. And but some things stand out. And I just thought that like listening to this demo and not knowing anything about this band or anything, it's just amazing to me that like bands could come out the gate and be like kind of this polished, right? Like this recording is spectacular. The songs, like they've cut out all the fat, but they're still like fast, short, good modern hardcore songs. Everything is under 2 minutes. They got like a couple songs that are around a minute, like, but these are like well thought out songs. It was just like kind of like a state of the union for me in the way that like, I'm not saying this is like the baseline band, but like just bands coming out now, you got to bring the heat. Like even if you're in the demo era or the demo, like your demo stage, like you're not putting out LPs yet and shit, like bands are coming this hard, right? Like this sounds great. The songs are great. And yeah, I mean, that's it. Like, you can't fuck around to be a shitty hardcore band these days. Like, nobody's got time for it, you know? So I really enjoyed this. I thought these four songs are really palatable, easy to listen to. Only thing I say is, like, man, some of these lines, like, again, we don't know who these people are, but I mean, they've got to be coming hard, like Kev One, for some of these lyrics, right? Like, I think it was like dead in a ditch, stuff like that. So I don't know. Hopefully they live it. But I did like this record. Dan, what's your take?
I think this is the closest thing to Right Brigade and Carry On that I've heard in a long time. This is like Roll With The Punches era Carry On sound, with a little bit, they can't help but shrug off what hardcore today is, as part of the sound as well. It's really good. I listened to this a lot and enjoyed it a lot. I was surprised by, you know, like First Day Out, I assume that's a prison reference. And like you say, there's a lot of hard visual imagery in the lyrics. But it's really good music. And like you say, for this to be a demo and come so correct is awesome. I'm probably going to spend a lot more time listening to this as well. It definitely gives me that sweet spot in between Right Brigade and when Carry On was being influenced by Right Brigade. Like, it's right there. And that's a style of music I love. So I was really psyched that this was, you know, you turned me on to this.
Yeah. And we shouldn't say like it's a demo for sure, 'cause I don't know what's going on with it, but there's no, like, if you go on the Bandcamp, I don't see anywhere to order like a physical copy. So, you know, I just kind of consider that a demo 'cause I'm a dumbass. So I don't know if you want to do a carve out that it's a digital EP or something. Like, again, it's just, I kind of consider anything that comes out and is short and doesn't have like a physical copy attached to it is like a demo. You know, do you think that's fair, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I think getting hung up on what it would be called is the least of the worries. It's like, enjoy the music, but I agree with you. I hope they wouldn't be offended that it would be referred to as a demo. But yeah, digital EP is maybe something that we need to work into the lexicon, because there's a lot of things, like, people are looking at the lead times on pressing records and they're just like, fuck it, we're just going to put it up.
I'm just trying to not get stabbed and left in a ditch with my feet cut off and my eyeballs gouged out and whatever other lines there are in this. Yeah. Andy, you got a take on this?
Yeah, same as you guys. I thought it was cool. It's definitely my wheelhouse musically. Yeah, it reminded me of a lot of cool bands back in the day. I kind of like the, I don't think it's two singers, but maybe the guitar player kind of does some backups, or maybe the singer just does a different line, a different break, and does a different line on some of the backups. He does some cool stuff with his I can't remember what song it was, where like I wrote it down, like Agenda. He does some cool things, I thought, but yeah, just cool record. Sounds good. I'd actually heard this before you put it up. Probably from No Echo, but yeah, just in my wheelhouse, and I'll listen to this kind of stuff all day. Definitely a little tougher than I am, but yeah, and the art's pretty wild. So looking forward to hear more.
The art on all their records is sick. Like, it's pretty wild. Like, some of it's Youth Crew, some of it's like, I don't know, similar to some Terror stuff, and then some of it is Cause for Alarm AF, right, and Backtrack. So it's pretty ill. Chris, what's your take on this?
The first 10 seconds of this or so kind of threw me off a bit, because it starts out pretty, you know, pretty mosh, like pretty beat down, especially something that Zach sends. You hear those first 10 seconds, you're like, okay, I see what I'm getting into here. But it starts that way, and then the intro, and then it picks up the pace pretty quick into, like, you know, full on fast part. And you know, don't get me wrong, there's certainly lots of you know, breakdowns and mosh parts, but it's definitely not what I thought it was going to be in the first 10 seconds. It's interesting that Dan mentioned he heard some Right Brigade and Carry On, so I'm curious to go back and kind of listen through that lens. For me, like, the things that I kind of kind of went to is it had a little bit of a locking out vibe, I think, but it was, you know, certainly a bit harder and more modern than that. I think the big thing that stood out to me is it kind of gave me like Skate Rat shit vibes, you know, like it's hard, it's fast, but it also has that kind of like Down to Nothing vibe or Kids Like Us vibe. And certainly if they're from Florida, maybe like Kids Like Us is, you know, someone that they reference or at least like is in their periphery and they respect. So it's interesting as well. But yeah, this is cool. I dig it.
Hell yeah. Everyone check it out on the playlist. Remember, 185milesouth.com. Click that playlist link and there is a playlist for every episode. So that's the easy way to find all this stuff. But check it out. First day out. The record, Don't Be Surprised. Digital EP. What's up? All right, let's wrap it up on the band D-Block. The record, Do Not Cross. Dude, what's up? 2022 rules so hard. There's so many bands that come out and play music I like. And it's just like, it's all I ever wanted, right? Like a lot of like the harder stuff that I liked in the 90s and the 2000s, like, dude, the bands were coming with like 4 or 5 minute songs. You know what I mean? And there's just something about like the last like handful of years that like all these bands figured out how to play like a harder style, a bounce style. They're incorporating all this stuff that I love in hardcore that's on the harder side, but they finally incorporated short songs, you know? So it's like so palatable. Of course, we're in the 2020s or whatever. So like good recordings are the standard. You know, it's not shitty recordings and 5 minute songs where you're like, God damn, that part was so ill. I wish a band would sound like that part. Like now there are bands that sound like that part. Right. And that's what D-Block is all about. I absolutely love this. It just bangs. It satisfies that part of me that wants this stuff and they do it so well. So, yeah, Dan, what's your take on this?
So this is, well, first of all, let's talk about the album cover or the record cover. It's straight up Cash Money Records, like Pixel Pen style, but also channeling like a kind of almost like an action film too at the same time. It's super rad. And then, you know, we're talking new music here. And, you know, a lot of the time on this pod, we'll refer to music like this as hardcore, you know, like this really aggressive beatdown style. But I would go also that we talked about the flex earlier. That's hardcore as well, but just done in a different, I don't know, speed lane, you know?
Yeah, that's like brutal, fast hardcore. This is like the hard style, dude.
Yeah. You know? Now, this, I was enjoying it. You know, the singer floats across the music really well. But, you know, I was listening to it like, okay, this is, you know, good, competent, like hardcore. And then the song Mouthpiece comes on. And it is like a modern day Show No Fear from Hold It Down Madball style. It uses so much of the negative space to really just provide so much of a vibe. And that song is like the true standout. And then the Do Not Cross song that comes on after it is also fantastic. But that Mouthpiece song is the one that, and the lyrics are awesome. It's like very aggressive about being stabbed in the back, which is a hardcore trope I will never get sick of. And it just, I don't know what you guys think, but I would say that song in particular is the standout for me. It's the one you know, when you listen to something new and you just go back to the one, like you're three quarters of the way through a song and you're like, shit, I want to hear it from the beginning before it ends. And you click back. That's what that song was like for me. I really dug that one. But all in all, great EP, but that song in particular is just, I hope I can hear more in that you know, kind of the way that they channel the vibe and the bounce on that song is just really pinnacle for me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is so short and so easy to listen to, but they take you on a journey, right? Like, that song does stand out. That's one of the highs, you know? But then, yeah, coming off of Do Not Cross, I like this whole thing. But, yeah, maybe if you're a side A, side B in this thing, you know, a side B, they come in with that late heat.
Yeah.
Andy, what's your take on this?
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, like you guys said, when I first listened to it, I was kind of doing some stuff, and it went by so fast. I was expecting some, you know, Cold as Life 5-minute song, so I had to go back right away and listen, like you guys are saying. Yeah, I mean, everything's tough about it. The record cover, my favorite was the mouthpiece song with that bass break, and then when it kind of cuts out, and just the vocals too, like that Negative Space Dan saying, that was ill. That was my favorite. That's my favorite song on the thing. But yeah, I agree with you all that the shorter, whatever style you want to call this, beat down, whatever, is definitely easier to take in. And I guess I got ADD. I can't listen to a 4 or 5 minute long song. So, when they're doing it like this, it really gets me psyched and makes this whole genre more palatable for me. But, this is definitely a rad record, and, kind of listen to some more. These dudes are definitely hard, and, I definitely don't want to ever stab him in the back.
Hell yeah. Also, shout out to Mouthpiece Cinder. Killer track. Chris, what's your take on this?
First off, I wish Ben was on this one, because I feel like this band is like his worst nightmare. And I would just be curious to see like where he would go with this and what he would talk about.
He would only talk about Mouthpiece and Tim McMahon and a bunch of other things. And then Zach would then tell him, well, we were all better without that take, and then we'd move on.
We're getting predictable, dude. Episode 186.
Yeah.
Very unpredictable, or very predictable. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah, so for me, I'm going to be honest, like, I'm getting a little bit kind of burnt out on this style of music, because there's a lot of it right now. And so like, for a band to kind of grab me, they have to be really good, and I think this is really good, so props to them on this, or on that. Like, they do it really well, and you know, they throw in enough fast parts to keep it, you know, death threat enough for me. But here's how I kind of see this playing out for me. I don't know if this is going to be something that'll be like a destination for me, like a destination listen for me, at least initially, but I did add a song to my workout playlist, Crush All Weights. and honestly, this is good enough that I can 100% see that track standing out, even amongst, you know, the Tsunamis and the Irates and the Hatebreeds and Never Ending Games that are on that playlist. And I'm going to get familiar with enough with this song, and I'm going to crave it. And I think that, you know, this EP is going to be something that is going to have a long tail for me, you know, thanks to the Crush All Weights playlist.
But that's a win, you know?
Totally. Like, and I think, no, go ahead.
Well, it's just, you, they end up on your playlist, right? And you listen to them to one song at least once a month for more than 1 minute. You're like a D block listener. You count on Spotify, right? And it's like,
no doubt.
This is how that stuff happens, dude. That's how like bands are putting up giant numbers, right? All it takes is one listen of one song in that like 30-day period, and you count as a listener for that band. So it's pretty ill, you know, like that's a win. If like you for like sure. one song out of like a style that you love, and it makes a playlist and you listen to it once a month, hell yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
No, totally. And like for me, like for this style of hardcore, like the bar is, yo, if it's good enough to get on this playlist, it's either, you know, just too igno not to get on it, like Irate, or it's just like such good quality down-tuned pit music that, yo, I got to throw it on there, and I got to put up some weight. And I think this has a little bit of A and a little bit of B. So yeah, I dig it.
I love it. All right, Dan, closing thoughts on this episode.
Free the Flex 3. When the Flex came over to play in America, they got stopped at the Boston airport and apprehended because they didn't fill out visas the last time they came, I believe. And they got put into holding cells and then marched straight back onto a plane 24 to 48 hours later and had to fly back to England. So fuck TSA. Let the flex live.
That's what's up. Andy, closing thoughts.
Thanks for having me. Shout out to everyone in Santa Fury that made that fed us awesome. The kids, the people set it up. Yeah. But again, thanks for having me, dudes. It's always great to talk to you guys. Much love.
Hell yeah. Chris, final thoughts.
Thanks for letting me talk some HC on the pod. Love it.
Hell yeah. Hardcore rules. Okay, everyone. Dan, where can people find you?
At Southport Instagrammer on Instagram.
Andy, where can people find you?
Ill Communication on Instagram.
That's right. Chris, where can people find you?
Chris Williams 51 on Twitter or Instagram. And I also do Change NWHC for the band on Twitter.
Hell yeah. Everyone, get at me, 185milessouth@gmail.com. That's the best way to get in touch with me. I answer every email. Guaranteed. Unless you're spamming me. What the fuck? Okay. Also, 185 Miles South on Instagram and Twitter. Zach Retaliate is my personal on Instagram. And you know, Retaliate is the best on Instagram. Everyone, we love you. We'll talk to you on Patreon next Monday.